And welcome back. This is Stephen Buck with Studio CPO. This podcast is a production of Care Providers Oklahoma, where we have an opportunity to visit with a wide array of guests, whether that be state elected officials, people involved in setting policy, people who work in long-term care, and sometimes the opportunity to chat with people who are peripherally involved with our sector. And today that is one of our guests, although Carl Farrar, you have worked in long-term care. You've done maintenance in a couple of buildings in your past. Is that right?
That's true. In my varied past, I have passed through long-term care. My wife is a long-term care administrator, and there were times when I needed employment and found work in maintenance departments in two different facilities in my past.
Well, let's go ahead and introduce your wife, and that's how I had a chance to meet Carl. Carl's wife, Linda Farrar, is a member of the Care Providers Oklahoma teaching faculty. She works with us as a consulting RN, consulting administrator. She also does work with our neighbors to the north in the state of Kansas. So it's been my delight to get to know Linda, and as part of that, Carl will frequently accompany her on her trips. And Carl, what really, when you and I first met, what really caught my attention is you have developed a passion for cycling. Many different trips have taken you on your bicycle across vast swaths of our country. How did you get involved in cycling? And tell me a little bit about why you enjoy these long rides.
That's hard to describe because it developed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I really have two bicycle careers.
Okay.
My first bicycle, of course, I grew up on a bicycle, but my first bicycling experience as far as touring happened when I was 20, in my mid-20s. My college best friend from college called me. He was working in Muskegon, Michigan at the time, and he called me and said basically he'd like to take a bicycle trip around Lake Michigan. Would I be interested in doing something like that? And my response was, yeah, that sounds like fun. I don't own a bicycle and I haven't done much bicycling, but I'd like to do that. So I bought a bicycle and started training, and we ended up going around Lake Michigan. Enjoyed it. This is camping out, carrying your gear with you all the time. So we're talking about 1975 or something like that. Okay. Bicycling was different then than it is today. We enjoyed that trip so much that the next year we toured New England.
Okay.
Started in Massachusetts, went west, went the north through New Hampshire, across Vermont, and into Maine. And that trip ended two things, really. We found out that, now we're getting into other areas of the bike. This isn't my history.
but I want to go back because this surprised me as you were talking about this. So you can do a pathway around Lake Michigan. That would,
right.
Would that take you into Canada?
No.
Okay.
Go across Mackinac Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in Upper Michigan, Upper Peninsula, I believe it's called.
The Mitten, right? Don't they call that the Mitten at the very top, the way the geography is shaped?
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Okay, all right.
I can see a mitten there. But there's a sliver of Michigan that's on the north side of Lake Superior.
Gotcha.
And that we did not go into Canada.
Okay.
So we rode around Lake Michigan, not clear around because we avoided Chicago.
Yeah.
Didn't want to. So we rode around, went through Green Bay, and I can't remember the name of the town now. We took a ferry back across Lake Michigan.
Okay.
And ended the trip at that
point. How many days was that?
I don't know.
You just lived
a week.
A week?
Okay. Yeah, probably a little better. 10 days, maybe.
Okay. Now, you were talking about the New England trip. And if I understand the history of the New England trip a little bit, you were so committed to that that you actually at the time told your employer that you were going to get on the bike even if it cost you your job. Was that relayed to me accurately?
Pretty accurately.
Okay.
I left my employment. At that time, I was being a cowboy in a feedlot. And that's a whole other story. But I told my boss I was going to go tour New England on a bicycle. And how long would that take? Oh, about a week. So at the end of a week, I called my boss and said, I'm not going to be there Monday. And because we aren't anywhere near the end of our trip, we didn't know how long it was going to take. And he said, well, you probably won't have a job when you get back. And I said, okay, no problem. That's part of my philosophy, is I can get a job anywhere.
Sure.
At that time, and I was, now we'll get to it, I was retired.
Okay.
Basically, doing whatever I felt like was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that has taken me a lot of different directions.
Now, on this pathway, when did you and Linda connect?
Later,
okay.
So we got married in 81.
Okay.
And I'm talking in the 1970s at this point. So let's back up just a little to know who Carl Farrar is.
Yeah.
I graduated college and went back to the family-owned business. And about a year and a half there, I decided, you know, there's other things in the world that I have not experienced. I had worked at the family business since I was following my dad around in grade school.
Now, you went to Kansas. You went to Kansas State, right? That's where you did your academic training. So, are you from Kansas?
I grew up South Central Kansas, southwest of Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
Rural America, population 500.
Wheat country.
Wheat country. Mostly wheat. Very little. A lot of cattle, but
right.
Doesn't qualify as cattle country.
Right.
It's flat land wheat country.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in the machine shop, so that's the only thing I knew. And I went to college, got a degree, came back and worked in the family business and said, there's other things that I haven't experienced. And I basically at that time retired and did lots of different things. I've been a cowboy. I've been a truck driver. I have many stories that can go along those lines. And now I've forgotten where we were going.
Well, so you meandered through the 70s, right? And you talked about...
Okay, meeting my wife was the time.
But you said you had two careers in bicycling, if I remember right.
Right.
And so you had your childhood bicycling and then your young adulthood. You were on a bike quite a bit. But I have met you in your later adulthood. Was that your second career, your late life commitment to biking?
Yep. Yeah. I did that trip. I did another trip too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap up the New England trip.
Okay, let's do that.
So I did the touring New England. Many stories to be told there. I did keep a log while we were doing.
Have you published the log?
No.
Okay.
No, it's been converted to electronics and it's stored in the cloud now. But I have it. We ended that trip with an accident. My friend and I were both going downhill, and the hill is so steep that we discovered too late that the hill can be too steep. When you put on the brakes, the weight comes off the hillside, and you have no control of the bike.
Okay.
He dumped his bike, and I dumped mine at the same time. We both realized we weren't communicating with each other verbally, but we both realized we were out of control. And we dumped our bikes at the same time. He was about 50 feet, 60 feet in front of me. So he dumped his bike in the fill of the highway.
Okay.
And I dumped my bike in the cut of the highway.
Now, for those who won't know the difference between a fill and a cut, just to help them get visual imagery.
Okay. The road was going down the mountain. They put the road through a rock pile.
Mm-hmm.
They had to blast the road. So on either side of the road for me was a rock wall. He was in the fill, which is where they fill up the dirt. They build the dirt up to the road pile, the roadway. And so he had grass on either side of him.
Okay.
I dumped my bike on the road. He dumped his bike in the grass. I had 7 stitches in the back of my head. I had road rash all over my body, bruises and all that kind of stuff. He dumped his in the grass and slid down over the hill. He didn't have any bodily injuries. Both of our bikes took the hit.
Mm-hmm.
So we were done biking for 3 days while we hitchhiked to town to repair the bikes.
Yeah.
And 3 days then in camp to heal. The third day we decided we better continue this, and it was raining. It was not a fun day. About noon that day that we took off, we said, we're done. And we called our ride. My sister lived in the area, and she provided. I called her and said, we're done. Come get me.
Yep.
And so that ride was over. That started the next adventure. My friend said he liked New England, and he stayed, and he's still there today.
Okay.
But I had to find a way. We had driven his car up to New England, so I had to find a way home. I ended up getting on with a company where I drove a vehicle for a person who was moving from New England to St. Louis. So I drove their vehicle to St. Louis thinking, well, I'll do the same thing, company, and get on to home, which mm-hmm. Norwich or Wichita, Kansas. Couldn't find a ride in St. Louis, so I came home through the Ozarks on my bicycle.
That would be a labor. I mean, because that's not flat ground.
No, it was hilly ground. But over time, you get in condition.
Right.
So New England conditioned me for my Ozarks trip.
Mm-hmm.
Coming home from, I don't even remember how long it took me to get from St. Louis to Southwest. I had friends in Southwest Missouri. Coming home from Southwest Missouri, I did 120 miles a day with full gear. And that's my high water mark as far as how many miles do you do a day. So that was the second trip, was getting home for the third trip.
Getting home from St. Louis back home. Yeah.
Now let's introduce my wife, Linda.
Great. Who, by the way, just to remind you, is an important part of our teaching faculty at Care Providers Oklahoma. Many of our listeners will have heard her speak at a convention or in one of our classrooms. So let's hear about meeting Linda.
Well, when we got married, I'm going to keep this close to the bicycle story.
Yep.
When we got married, we lived on the farm. 2 miles out of town on a sand road, and that does away with bicycling.
Mm-hmm.
I also discovered that when you're married, you need an income.
Yeah, that's important.
So my retirement years were over. and I became a laborer and other things. So let's take as far as bicycling is concerned, we take a 30-year hiatus from bicycling.
Mm-hmm. During that time, Linda's building her career and you're helping support the family, and that's where your experience in long-term care comes in and things like that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's my diversified background.
Yeah.
Linda and I together owned a donut shop and ran a donut shop. That's one of the things that mm-hmm. I have done. I was a truck driver in those times. I was a custom harvester.
Okay.
Wheat harvest. That goes back to my background in the machine shop.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward 30 years, and my oldest son called me one day and said, "Dad, I think it'd be fun to ride across Kansas. There's a organized ride that goes across Kansas. I'd like to do that." And my response to him was the very same thing it was 30 years prior. "That sounds like fun. I think I ought to do that. I don't own a bicycle, but I'll get one." Mm-hmm. That was in 2010. Didn't make the Kansas ride that year because I knew what it took to get ready. And he called me in January saying he'd like to do this ride in June. And in March, I called him and said, "I'm not going to be ready." Well, I didn't go that year. My son did go. He regrets it. Well, I don't say can't say he regretted it. He suffered the yes. whole way across Kansas. I didn't ride that trip the next year either because of a gout outbreak. So in 2012, I rode the BAK, which is Bike Across Kansas. Mm-hmm. The highlight of that, and I'll choke up here. The highlight of that was I got to ride it with not only with my son, but my grandson. That was cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
How old was your grandson when he took the ride?
I think he was 14, maybe 15. He was riding at that time with the bicycle club in Lawrence, where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I went across Kansas with my son and grandson, and my son's son and grandson, not by the same, we're not talking about, I have two sons.
Right.
I have three sons.
Right.
But the grandson was not from the bicycling son.
Right, from the immediate lineage, right? A relative, yes, but not, so you had the grandfather.
Three generations. Yeah, that's the way to say it.
Yeah.
Three generation riding together. And that was so enjoyable, I guess is the way to say it, that since then I've done Ragbri, which is across Iowa. I've done an individual ride, a self-supported ride across Oklahoma with that same son and grandson mm-hmm. and wife. Future, well, maybe that's where we're wrapping up here.
Yeah.
Future is this summer I'm hoping to go. The plan is to ride across Colorado because that's been on my list to do for quite a while. And time's running out
yeah.
in so my bicycling career.
Which route will you take across Colorado?
Basically, Highway 40 across.
Okay.
Start on Dinosaur, Utah. Mm-hmm. Dinosaur, Colorado, which is right on the Utah border.
Yeah.
Over to Steamboat. Then over Rabbit Ears Pass. North to, and I forget the name of the town now. Go on over to Cameron Pass. We're on Highway 14 now, I believe it is. Into Fort Collins and then straight east, Sterling.
Okay. You will climb, you will ascend and then descend the Continental Divide as part of that trip.
There's two mountain passes to be maneuvered, to be challenged on that trip. Interesting, just side note, there's this amount of climb is the way bicycling keeps track of. So people say, "Wow, wouldn't that be a lot of climbing?" And that's one of the goals, is to experience that all day uphill.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same token, you get to experience an all day downhill too.
Mm-hmm.
For every up, there's a down. So the question is, well, isn't that a lot of climbing? And it turns out a ride across Iowa is exactly the same amount of climbing as it is across Colorado. It's just that in Colorado you do it in two climbs.
Yeah, it's very steep and very your climbs are more noticeable, I would assume, in Colorado, whereas Iowa may be a steadier but a slower gain. In Colorado or any of the mountainous, you're going to be going near vertical, it feels like, at some points.
For a short period.
Yep, that's right.
I think the Rabbit Ears Pass is about 6 miles of low gear.
Yeah.
6 mile climb. And then it kind of plateaus, and then you go back, finally get up to the peak, which is about 5 miles of plateau, and then you go downhill.
Yep.
The next one, Cameron Pass, is more like 10 miles, not quite as steep. But when you reach the top of that one, you have a 100-mile downhill to get out past through Fort Collins and clear out in the prairie.
Just make sure you don't lock up your brakes. You learned that lesson in New England, didn't
you? I learned that, yes.
Yeah, you've learned that.
you can go too fast.
So I'm going to ask you this question, and we really didn't have a chance to prep for this, but as we prepare to wrap up, the first question I'm going to ask is, as you've watched Linda in her career, what have been your observations of long-term caregivers? And then the second question is, I often speak about leadership and principles of leadership, principles of life. And I want you to kind of wrap up with the closing question. Your quest for biking is living life and accepting the challenges before you. And so I kind of want you to wrap up with your thoughts on a leadership or a life principle. But in your work with Linda, what can you say that you've observed about people who work in long-term care?
In order to be an effective worker in long-term care, you have to have the passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
The leaders that are effective and permanent in this industry have a passion that you won't find in other. They're there because of their passion.
Okay,
it's the love for the elders. Okay. I'm speaking for my wife.
That's mostly the lens of, and I'm going to have Linda on a future podcast. We'll see what she says about you when I do that.
Scary.
I know, but it'll all be good. And then as far as how you apply what you've done in biking and just kind of the rule by which you live by as an individual, what has biking taught you from a leadership standpoint?
Ooh, I don't know that there's biking. I don't think I can tie it to leadership. Maybe you can when you hear my answer.
Yeah.
The reason I like biking, and I think this is through, I'm an independent person.
Mm-hmm.
And on a bicycle, I'm the boss.
Okay.
If I want to turn right, I can turn right. Mm-hmm. If I want to turn left, I can turn left. If I want to quit, I can quit.
Mm-hmm.
Biking doesn't allow me to quit. I set a goal at the beginning of a day. If I'm just going to go for a ride, I mentally set a distance goal or something like that, or maybe a time goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to accomplish that. That's my drive to continue biking.
And I think that's an extraordinary leadership lesson, because what you articulated was a goal, that you have a goal orientation, and that you don't quit in working towards that goal. Fair?
That's fair.
All right. Yep. Carl, it's been delightful having you on. Thank you for sharing a part of your home life by supporting long-term care, because you come to Oklahoma frequently. When Linda goes to Kansas, you go to Kansas frequently.
Let's throw that one in there.
Yes, sir.
So, what, a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
Linda was speaking in Oklahoma City. I live in Texas, Fairview, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. And so I rode to Oklahoma City from Fairview to hear Linda speak.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's the advertising anyway. So I took that opportunity to ride my bicycle for 3 days, camping out, and I work it in.
That's... You know, and I'm going to take this opportunity to remind people that bikers are part of our transportation ecosystem. I'm sure you appreciate those drivers who demonstrate the appropriate road etiquette and give you the room to be safe.
Definitely.
It's very important. Well, Carl, it's been delightful. Thank you for spending a few minutes with me.
Thank you.
This has been Stephen with Studio CPO. Thanks for listening, and we'll be up with another pod soon.